You're listening to Elevate, the official podcast of Elite Agent Magazine for real estate industry sales professionals, property managers and leaders. Each episode, we bring you behind-the-scenes coaching, news analysis, exclusive interviews, technology and more to help you list more, sell more and elevate your results. To subscribe to the magazine, visit eliteagent.com.au/subscribe. Here is your host, Samantha McLean.
Hey, hey, Samantha McLean from Elite Agent. We've been in Melbourne for a good part of this week and happily had the chance to catch up with Marsha White Bayside director Kate Strickland. Some of you might remember that Kate was on the cover of one of our early issues back in 2015, and over the years we have loved staying in touch with her. She coached our Transformers in 2016 and spoke at our event How to Lead a Winning Team last year. Recently, she's been inspired also in amongst her incredibly full schedule to pick up the pen and write some articles, one which trended last week called Is There Room for Ego in Real Estate?, where Kate argues that there is, so long as you know how to keep it in check. In this podcast, we delve into this topic more deeply, as well as finding out from Kate how she maintains her amazing energy, which mentors and leaders have inspired her and how, and what you need to do if you want to be recruited by an elite performing business like Marsha White.
Welcome to the podcast, Kate Strickland.
Thank you, Samantha. Thanks for having me.
Well, it's amazing to be here, actually. It's a while since we've caught up. A few years ago, you were on the cover of Elite Agent, and you continue to go from strength to strength in your real estate career. And recently, you've also started writing for us as well, which is amazing. Your article, Is There a Place for Ego in Real Estate?, trended last week. And it's been hotly debated over time, the subject of ego. And you say that there needs to be a little bit of both. So talk about your reasoning behind that.
Yeah, well, I think there does have to be a balance because, well, first of all, we all look at ego as such a negative thing. Everyone says, oh, you've got a massive ego. Mm. But it was actually reading the Dan Harris book, 10% Happier, How to Tame the Voice Inside Your Head, that I realized that ego was just about the voice inside your head that's driving you sometimes to be better, but sometimes it's also driving you and saying you're not good enough. Mm. So once you tame that voice and understand that it's always there, that really is what ego is. So it's not necessarily a negative thing, but then you can get to a point where your ego gets a bit high and you start thinking, oh, I'm a bit of a celebrity in this industry. You go out for breakfast and people are going, oh, you know, there's Kate Strickland, that agent. And you think, oh, I just sell property for a living. I'm actually not a celebrity, but you can start to feel a bit up. And then when you're driving and striving all the time and you come in and you start throwing out, you know, you're a bit bossy and everything starts to get a little bit amped. Mm. That's when if you're taking that into your personal life with your friendships and your family and your loved ones, that you can actually start to be a bit gross. So I've learned through one marriage destruction where ego probably was a bit high and it was a bit me, me, me. You do have to now find that balance and realize that being a good agent actually isn't all about you. It's about your client and about your team. So I've learned a lot in my 36 years. I've come into some wisdom.
I was walking along here before I came in here and I recognised all the names along this street. So I sort of felt a bit like I was in the middle of
Hollywood Boulevard.
Real estate equivalent of Hollywood Boulevard. Yeah, so just for the guys that aren't familiar with you, tell us a bit about Bayside, about this area and what your market is like at the moment.
Well, you can call Bayside a bit of a bubble. There are some people that live in Bayside and never leave. So we've got everything here you need, from shops to transport to schools, parks. You've got the beach. So you've got an amazing lifestyle. It's a real lifestyle suburb. Some want to get out of it in winter because it's cold. But most people will come to Bayside and stay. So it's a really tight community. That can be advantage and disadvantage because if you're doing a great job and the word travels fast, then you'll elevate quickly in your career. It didn't take me long to become, I'd say, on people's shopping list because I was doing a good job and doing the things I said I'd do. But then conversely, if you're doing not so good a job, that will spread just as quickly as well because of this tight-knit community. So you have to be true to your word, be honest, you know, have your integrity and do what you say you're going to do. It's not that hard, for some it is, but I think you can rise here pretty quickly. Mm. So it's a tight-knit community. There's new wealth in our suburb, which can often mean that when the market gets hit, and I always say the market's not a thing, it's made of people. Mm. And when people's jobs are on the line or their bonuses aren't coming in or things are going a bit backwards for them financially, I think Brighton, which is our dress circle or where I mainly focus, we can be hit a lot because we have our own currency.
Yeah. Would you call this Real Housewives of Melbourne territory?
It is, yeah. So you've got Toorak and you've got Brighton. They're sort of the Real Housewives of Melbourne territory, exactly. So everyone's in everyone's business. Yep. What happens in the street is known to everyone in the suburb within minutes. You know, I go home and my partner says, and I, how do you know everything about everyone? But you just do.
Yeah.
But being involved in the community like that, I've always said, and having a beautiful blend between who you are as an agent but who you are as a person, if you can blend them both together and just be a great member of the community, then you'll be a very successful real estate professional.
Mm. I remember also in your article you said that you do need a bit of ego to say to yourself, look, I've got this, because sometimes it's really easy to doubt yourself in amongst some of the people that you sell with. You know, it must be quite easy to get a bit overwhelmed sometimes, but then
that's right.
But then that's where your ego can come in and be a good thing.
That's right. So you need it to be strong and protect yourself against the negative thought in your head saying, you know, I don't think I'm good enough to represent this property, or I don't think that I'm good enough to have intellectual conversations with this person. They're on the BRW top 10 rich list, so do I really have a place on their lounge room? Those conversations are there, but you have to back yourself as a real estate professional, have your knowledge and experience obviously helps. You know, I'm 10 years around Brighton now, almost 10 years, so that helps. But for someone coming in, you have to say, well, I've got a place in this lounge room. I back myself that I'd be the best person to represent them. And if I'm not representing them, I feel for them because I actually think that I'd do a better job than someone else based on my team, my work ethic, my experience, my empathy with clients and my connectivity with buyers and all those sorts of things. So, yeah, there's a place for saying I belong here and I can do the best job.
Mm. And I remember also when we talked back in 2014, you have an interesting background before real estate as well. So you represented Australia in softball, right?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Again, for people that might know you so well, how has your sporting background shaped your career now?
Oh, massively, because to be the best athlete you can be, you have to have that resilience. You have to, I guess, fake it till you make it to an extent. So it's a bit of a put on your game face. And in real estate, we can have so much going on. That's why I talk about on field and off field. You know, you can have so much going on off the field. You could have had a death to a loved one, or you've had a relationship blow up in the morning and then you're going into a presentation that could be worth $25,000 to your personal income. And you're thinking everything's a mess off the field, but I've got to knock on this door and pull it together and put in the best performance I can. I've got this one opportunity to make an impression. So that was the same as being an athlete. You could have an injury, you could have had an argument with a teammate, or your coach has given you some negative feedback that you didn't take on so well, but you run onto the field and you better put on the best performance you ever have because you've only got that one match to put out your best. So I think I've really learnt that is just park the funk, as a lot of coaches say, put it to the side. And this is, as I walk up the path, and I say to people, have a routine. So as an athlete, look at Federer, how many times he bounces the ball. Look at Nadal, how he picks his wedge. You know, everyone's got something they do. As an agent, I get up in the morning, I've talked about, I use the same body wash on auction day. I'll listen to a podcast on a Saturday morning. I'll have my coffee at a certain spot. I'll come into the office, flip through the paper. So there's things that I'll do that get me into game mode.
Mm.
So I think too many people probably just fly by the seat of their pants instead of being amazingly prepared through that routine that gets them into that zone, that peak performance zone.
Yeah, that's really interesting. So that's a really great tip, actually, is if you're doing different things on auction day, well, let's just say any game day, it's actually useful to develop a routine which will get all of the senses going rather than just, I've got to do this.
Could be a certain song before you go into a listing presentation, or you have a green juice before open for inspections, or whatever it is, but it's just something.
Mm.
Like, I'll travel with my pillow because I always traveled with my pillow as an athlete because I knew that when I put my head on my pillow, I was comfortable wherever I was in the world. So I do it still now.
Yeah.
You know, so little things like that, they're superstitions to an extent, but for me, it's about you've got that overperformance zone where you're nervous and your heart's going and you can't think straight. You've got underperformance where you think, I can't be bothered. You know, I've got a case of today, I just don't have it. And then you've got that peak performance line, and that routine and ritual gets you to that peak performance.
So can I ask you what your song is?
Do you know what? I change my songs all the time and I often share them. Like, I was rock set last weekend. I was get dressed for success. It's something like that. I don't know, whatever. And I'll sing it and I'll do a little video to my team in the morning of me singing like Madonna or something. But, you know, it could just be something that comes into my world. And I'm like, oh, I love that song. It pumps me up today. Bang. So it's not so much a song, but, you know, music's important.
It's a vibe. Yeah, I agree with you completely. Yeah, it can completely change your state. So this interview is part of a series we're calling The Leadership Diaries, because your next article that you've done for Elite Agent is about building a pit crew. So we're going to get into some of that sort of stuff. Because I do remember back in 2014 as well, like I remember your goal was to recruit more people, and it's been wonderful to see your team grow over the last 2 years. So it's a great opportunity to ask some questions for people that might be thinking about leadership. So are you ready?
Absolutely.
Okay. All right. So you've been a great advocate of, I'm not going to call it work-life balance because no one likes the word balance anymore. I like to call it tilting because, you know, sometimes you need to be work and sometimes you need to be off. Mm-hmm. And I remember you talking about sprints. Yep. Is that still part of your
massively
routine? So explain to me how that works.
So I know that I can't go hard 52 weeks of a year and put in my best and have the energy that I bring to what I do, and that ability to just plug in to a client and a situation. So I know to be fresh, I can go hard for 10 weeks and then I need time off. Hard for 10 weeks, time off. So I've got 4 10-week blocks a year. Luckily, they work in with school holidays here. But I've said to people, use a different sprint session. If it's 6 weeks on, 4 days off. If it's 6 months on, 6 weeks off. You know, work out what works for you and coordinate with your team and your team leaders. But for me, 4 week blocks of 10. And then 2 weeks off. And then over Christmas, I have 6 weeks off, which is a really beautiful break just to unplug, refresh, unpack the bags of yourself and your business, and then repack it all maybe in a more efficient way for the following sprint.
What does the first day of your day look like? Are you a 5 a.m. clubber?
God, no, no. In summer, do you know what? I'm a seasonal girl. So when the weather's good, I am up and about and I don't need a lot of sleep, luckily. My partner thinks he could tap me on the shoulder at 3 a.m. I'd be like, yep, what are you up for talking about? So I don't need a lot of sleep. But in winter, I'm happy to stay cozy and not get up and train. So I'll even get a run in the middle of the day if I can. Tomorrow, I know I finish work at 5:30, which is just heaven because I can go for an amazingly beautiful long walk at the end of the day. So I am in winter not as routine, but in the summer I'll bounce up and I'll train in the morning early and then even train at night. I just love daylight saving. Oh gosh, I wish we had it all year.
I can't wait for it either.
Can't wait.
I know. Can you name someone that has had a tremendous impact on you as a leader?
I would say Jack Bongiorno, who's one of the founders of Marshall White, has probably been as impactful on my career as a person and as an agent and as a leader. I always say with Jack, he's got the ability to make or break my day in a sentence. Like, he's made me cry. I've had him come to me after a negotiation and say, don't ever talk over me again, you know, and then I've had him come to me and give me such amazing uplifts and upgrades in my business that I've then passed on to my team and future leaders in our business. So Jack will stick with me my whole life as an incredible role model and mentor to me, and still is. I just think he's a phenomenal leader and runs this business. He's our sales director, and we all know Marshall White and the power of it as a brand and a business. So he's just bee's knees.
That's interesting that you say that he's had the impact on you. One moment it can be tears and then the next moment it can be joy. So some people have trouble taking on feedback. Actually, Chris Hanley doesn't
talks
like
about
that
guidance. I know. Yeah.
What advice would you give to people who have trouble accepting feedback that may not be always positive?
Well, I even heard Ken Hinckley with Port Adelaide in the AFL yesterday saying, hit me with the feedback because it's only going to make me better. So I think it's always thinking to myself, I won't give somebody any sort of guidance if I don't have any care about their career. So if I'm sitting down with somebody and I'm saying to them, here's some upgrades, you can do this better, or I'm actually giving them a clip and saying, you're being lazy, you're dragging your tail, what are you doing? If I'm giving them a bit of a hammering, it's because I care. And I know that about me. Jack wouldn't have given me a hammering over my 7 years at Marshall White if he hadn't have seen potential in me to go on and be a great leader of the business and in the community and our profession. I think sometimes when you get knocked around or someone gives you feedback or guidance, it's because they care. So they're seeing potential in you and they're wanting to invest their time and knowledge in you. That's a privilege. So see feedback as an amazing pat on the back to say, all right, I've got something that they see in me and they're wanting to drive me to be better and they see room for improvement. So grab it with both hands and then don't fire back. When you get feedback, don't fire back. I was watching The Block the other night and that girl's what she's getting feedback from the designer telling her how to do things better. And she's just like, really? No. And then the designer says, well, what do you do for a living? I'm a flight attendant. What do you do? I'm a designer, so I'm giving you design advice. You know, so if someone's coming to you giving you advice, they're obviously good at what they do and they're seeing potential in you. Grab it, take it on, digest it. If you then want to go back to them the next day and say, can I circle back to what we spoke about? A couple of things I didn't necessarily agree with, or there's a couple of things that didn't land or resonate. Can we go back over them? They'll appreciate that. Don't pull out the fangs when someone gives you feedback. It's a good thing.
No, that's a really good way of looking at it. Who are you learning from right now?
So we've got a new COO in our Bayside office, Paul Gregory. In the past, he was CEO at National Geographic. He's been over in Hong Kong. He's lived all around the world running businesses, and he happens to be husbands with my business partner, Barb, who we launched the business with 7 years ago. I've always had amazing respect for Paul, but he comes into real estate with no real estate experience other than being married to an agent for 20 years, and his corporate background, and he's really driving my intellect, getting me reading different books, getting me thinking differently. I would say this year I'm a completely different version of myself with Paul driving me as a leader. And you know what? It really got me going on the ego stuff because he was driving me in possibly a masculine way because that's his style. I was adapting that and probably using it in the wrong way or taking it home. So I had to sit back and think, hang on a sec, I'm loving what I'm learning from Paul. He's driving me to be a better leader, but I can still do it in a feminine way, an empathetic way, or my way. But he has really impacted on me this year and will continue to for the rest of my life, even when he's out of real estate and I am out of real estate. Great driver.
Amazing. Where do great ideas in your business generally come from?
That's a good question. We do a lot of collaboration as leaders. I've got a mind that will never stop. So my brain at 3:30 in the morning, I'm turning over and putting ideas in my notes and then I'll spit them out a million miles an hour. You're looking at me going, I do that too.
No, I'm just thinking we should call each other.
3:30 a.m. brainstorm.
Yeah.
So I just spit things out. Most of my good ideas, though, come when my mind is quiet. I'll find if I lie on a yoga mat on a Monday night, when I lie down to just start breathing, I'll duck back out to my phone before the session even starts and I'll just go bang, bang, bang and scribble some notes in. On holidays, I'm at my most clear to be creative. If I go to a health retreat and do a couple of days of silence, then all I need is a pen and paper and the ideas I write down are extraordinary. So, you know, I encourage people to have quiet time because you can't be creative, you can't come up with ideas when you're in it. You've got to take yourself out of it, both mentally and from an environment perspective, completely remove yourself and then everything starts to flow.
So you're building your team at the moment. What is your favorite question to ask someone in a job interview and what does it tell you about the person?
Oh, good question, because I was helping my partner interview for a PA a couple of weeks ago. I like asking what their understanding is of us because it shows that they've prepared. If they're coming into a job interview and they've got no idea about Marshall White as a business, Marshall White's culture, if they've not actually come out and seen us operating, even if that's not relevant to the role they're going for, then I almost feel like they've got no business even sitting in that chair having a conversation. I just think you can't be so busy that at night, instead of flicking through Instagram, you're not Googling our business and finding out what we're all about. Mm. So straight away, that is just the biggest cross to someone. I just think, well, if you're not doing your preparation for an interview, are you going to prepare each day to be your best for what we need? And we're an elite performance company and I'm an elite performer and I've got amazingly high expectations of my crew and my tribe. So in an interview, if you come unprepared and you're just sitting there dilly-dallying and fluffing your way through it, then you probably aren't getting through my stage one.
Yeah. No, agreed, especially when most businesses are on Instagram right now. So even if they are flicking through Instagram,
and have a look at us.
You'd have to be under a rock not to know who Marshall
White
is.
That's right. We're doing a digital interview of them. They should be doing one back. You know, it's a two-way interview.
Yeah, completely. Given that, let's say you hire someone, What is the best way for you to help them understand what the culture of your team is?
Mm-hmm. Well, our interview process is interesting. So we've got different stages of interviews where it's first catch-ups in the office and it's quite formal. Second one's out for a coffee or a drink in a cafe. The third one might be in a team environment where I invite them along to a Saturday end-of-day drinks to see how they fit the culture. And the last one might be with a Jack Bongiorno at his house. So it's almost a bit intimidating and it's like, this is the last hurdle. If you cross this and he says, yes, you're in. That weaves them into our culture to understand how we are as people and how we do things. We have a dinner party test that we just run in our minds. If I'm out for dinner and I'm happy to sit next to them, have a glass of red and have a chat, then they fit the culture. If I think I'd hate to be stuck next to this person at a company function, then you probably don't fit the culture. And I know that you don't have to love everyone you work with, but you certainly have to enjoy their content, enjoy their energy, and have some sort of synergy with them to where you can work together. We see our teammates more than we see our loved ones. So you've got to have an incredible relationship and respect for one another. So if I can't sit and have a glass of red and I think I cannot stand being stuck behind this person or next to them at a function, then they're just not the right fit. It is that simple to actually see if they would blend into our culture.
One characteristic you think every leader should possess?
Empathy. I've just learnt more and more over these years about the ability to just put yourself in their shoes. You never know what someone's going through. You never know what they've left behind on a day, what they've got coming up in their future, you know, that's going to affect the present. And if you can't understand what they're going through, ask them about it, hear them out on it, you know, and be able to work out a better way, then you will never get the best out of your team. If you don't like cats, but you know they're obsessed with cats and that's what they love, then you have to ask about their cats. Tell me about them. And you're thinking in your head, I couldn't care less about your cats. But when you ask them at 7:30 at night to go and do something for you that's completely outside of their job description and timeline of their role, they're going to go, she doesn't care about my cats, so why am I going to do that at 7:30? So you've just got to empathise with one another. It's a huge skill. It's a skill that women have intrinsically already and a skill that men don't and need to work on as leaders. If you're just all one way and you've got that ego cranked up, then don't think that your team's going to take a bullet for you.
What advice would you give someone going into a leadership position for the first time?
Don't expect to go into a leadership position without, I guess, watching people who do it well. So it's like anything, success leaves clues. So don't think that you get to the top just because you're a good agent. It's not going to make you a good leader. They do not go hand in hand. In fact, some of the best agents in the country aren't in leadership positions. If you want to be a leader, go and learn how to be a leader. What does it look like? What skills do I need? Go and spend time and shadow people who do it well, learn from them, and then go and model it, but also have your own flavour and your own style. You can't be Jack Bongiorno or Marcus Kiminello or James Tostevin. You know, you have to be yourself. So that's first and foremost. Yeah, be authentic as a leader, but you have to learn how and you have to model yourself on people who do it well. If you just think that you get to the top and can start to lead because you write the most money in your office, some of the best leaders in this office aren't the best performers. So it's not just leading by example and performance. It's leading by empathizing. It's leading by energy. It's leading by fun or otherwise, being the person someone goes to when they're sad or when they're down or having a tough time, that makes you a great leader and you might be the fifth best writer in the office.
I mean, you're a great example of that because I remember you and James did a session together for our Transformers a couple of years ago as well, and there couldn't be two more different agents than you and James because he's all about the calls and getting on the phone and all the rest of it, and you're all about the community. So I think that's living proof, really.
Absolutely.
One size doesn't fit all, and you can be successful doing you more so than trying to be someone else.
Exactly. The minute you start being someone else, you've lost the buy-in of your team because they're going, who is this person? I don't even recognise them anymore.
What does leadership at home look like?
Well, that's a good question because it's totally different to leadership at work, isn't it? And it comes back to the ego thing. And what I learned in a destruction of a relationship 13 years in was I was trying to run my relationship like I run my business, where I am a boss, so to speak, and I want things done a certain way and I want them to look a certain way because my way looks pretty good at work doesn't mean it looks good at home. So I've come into a completely different relationship that has grown me as a leader at work as well now too, where I have to be, there are things where I'm strong and things where Tom's strong and vice versa, And it's a matter of actually the whole don't pull out the fangs thing. Like, that's a classic. When your partner gives you feedback, what do? You just pull out the fangs and you just say, that's not what I do, and you do it worse. Instead of going, oh, hang on a sec, they're saying it for a reason. I'm probably contributing to that conversation. Like, they're saying it, I need to look at myself, unpack the bags of myself as a partner, repack the bags in a better way. And so the whole sleep on it technique, so actually sleep on it overnight and then go back to them the next day. Same thing, digest what they've said, go back and say, all right, you're obviously in some pain in this. Now, what do people say things to either avoid pain or go towards pleasure? So they're saying it for a reason. So let's talk about it. But I'm 36 and I'm only still working that out. Now, relationships are tough. They're a constant evolution, and that nimbleness and ability to be agile and adapt is probably what I'm learning the most.
Last question. What are your goals moving forward for the next couple of years?
That's such a good question, and I can't wait for Christmas holidays to sit down and work that out. I said to someone a couple of weeks ago, if I left real estate tomorrow, I would feel I'd done everything that I wanted to do. I've grown myself, I've grown my business, I've grown others and mentored them. I've attracted 5 people into real estate that I've sold to or sold for, that I've then employed. So I've even inspired people to be better versions of themselves. I said to Jack the other day, you know, I could write between 1 and 1.5 million a year and live a very happy, fulfilled life, but then have so much time for great things off the field as well. So, you know, coming back to my core values and learning what they are has been great this year. And helping others is massive, and being happy, but personal growth. So making sure that I'm adding things to me, other layers to me, probably more from a profession standpoint, is just elevating this whole industry and making it a better version of itself. I'm so passionate about that. And I think that's probably my now higher level step beyond just listing, selling and running a great business. So I look forward to how that looks in the next couple of years. I'm not 100% sure how it will go. And I will spend time over my off-peak time over Christmas, New Year to start packing that up. And I can't wait.
Absolutely. Well, I'm sure that there's a lot of people out there that are learning for you now in everything that you do at the moment. Kate, thank you so much for joining us on the podcast. It's been awesome talking to you again, and we'll check in with you in the new year.
Thanks, Sam. Thank you very much.
To subscribe to the magazine, visit eliteagent.com.au/subscribe.